This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
From North, South, East, and West, North America, Japan, and back again, this is your home for modern-day wrestling. With the occasional trip back in time, it's Place to Be Nation's main event. Now let's head into Studio B with your host, Scott Criscolo, and the godfather, Nate Milton.
Place to Be Nation! It is a very busy holiday weekend as summer is coming to an end. Welcome to your home for everything modern day wrestling, Place to Be Nation's main event. I am your co-host, Scott Criscolo. Episode, I have no idea how long I've been waiting to say this number, 132. And for the next three episodes, we are going to have the cream of the crop, because those are like arguably three of the best sports jersey numbers ever, 32, 33, and 34. I know one of us in the Trinity tonight will enjoy saying Neil Anderson when we get to 135, but we'll wait on that. Anyway, you know that chuckle. Let's bring him in and then we'll chat. He is the co-host of the Kings of Sport. He and the gang have a tremendous Patreon channel that we'd love for you to check out, but he'll get more into that later. And I talked, he's had a busy week. He was on last night with somebody. He may be on with us on Saturday. He's a busy man. He's the man with a plan. The Godfather, Nate Milton.
What is going on, brother? Yes, episode 132, of course, the O.J. Mayo episode. may he be the only O.J. we mentioned tonight.
They both have one thing in common. They both went to fucking scumbag asshole college. But anyway, that's just me. Anyway, joining us also, because we want him to give our 32s. He is the conscience of Place to Be Nation. He has a very busy weekend, which is why tonight's episode is pretty fucking great for him. Mr. Steve Willey.
Yes, thank you for having me on. The Walton episode, the Luke Walton episode, 132.
Did he really wear that number for anybody? Did he wear it for the Lakers? He didn't wear it for the Lakers, that's for sure. We know that for a fact. He did not wear it for the Lakers. Yes, guys, 32 is just an epic number. I mean, let's go. Well, you know, it's 32 is not a big baseball number. I don't know a lot of 32s in baseball.
That's I was looking this up when we did the last one because Koufax, one of my,
yes,
Jewish heritage on my mom's side. So Sandy Koufax is a huge name and the Jewish religion, especially with the New York.
Oh, yeah, big time. He's from Brooklyn. He's from Brighton. That's big time.
I thought it was section. Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Great biography, too, if you like the baseball biographies. And Steve Carlton was the other.
Oh, yes, Steve Carlton. A couple of 32s. Hockey? I don't think so. Not that I know of. 32? Well, after we post this, as you're watching this, if you're listening to this, obviously we're already on our Facebook page. If you know any 32s besides the ones we mentioned, please put them down, particularly hockey. Obviously, football and hoops, there's a shit ton. We just mentioned the Voldemort of the NFL history books, so we won't mention him.
Chris Benoit?
What is it with 32s that go to fucking USC?
Mm-hmm.
32, of course. Hall of Famer, former Oakland/Los Angeles. Actually, no, I think he was only an LA Raider. I don't think he ever played in Oakland. No, he didn't. I think his rookie year was their first year in LA. And then by the time they left LA and went back to Oakland, I think he was already in Kansas City. Of course, talking about Heisman Trophy winner. And guy who might have been the reason that chase on June 17th, 1994, Mr. Marcus Allen. Although I don't think he wore 32 at USC. Something tells me, because I'm sure that number's retired. I think Voldemort's put that number up there. So I don't know. What did he wear? He didn't wear USC. He didn't wear 33. I think Charles White wore 33. What did he wear? Oh, shit. 31, maybe? Maybe he wore 23? I don't know. Anyway, he wore 32, of course, with the Raiders. So, Let's think. Any other 32s?
I mean, basketball is just...
Well, basketball is just laden with them. Of course...
You can make an all-time, you know, greatest team ever using 32s.
Pretty much. Of course, the 32 that I have close to my heart, I'm actually wearing it right now, and that is, of course, Irvin himself.
Richard Hamilton.
Richard... Fuck him. I don't think he wore 32 with the net with UConn, though. He probably did. Of course, I am talking about Irvin himself, the great Magic Johnson, who, of course, is my favorite player of all time.
Big Magic Johnson. What has he done? He's got eight. Stay classy, Donald Sterling.
Jesus, what's he doing now?
Oh, Scotty, you got to listen to, like, the Mothership is hit and miss with some of their productions, but the Ramona Shelburne 30 for 30 on the Donald Sterling thing is crazy.
It's oh my God. He's got AIDS.
My God.
Like, you thought you knew Donald Sterling was nuts, but there's a lot. He's been weird for a while.
My God. Oh God.
I didn't even know his name wasn't even Donald Sterling. That was a creation he made up.
That must be the name.
Real name Steve is Donald Tuckowitz.
Oh,
and he wanted to feel flashy in L.A., so he changed his name to Donald Sterling.
And I thought we were just talking about great Jews in sports, Steve.
Yeah, and now we talked about one.
You know, those are the great Jews in history. You know, Koufax, Goldberg, Tuckowitz.
Well, we'll get to Goldberg when we get to episode 194, right? I think that's what he wore, 194. Let's see. Other, let's see.
Well, you got the NBA, like, you got the mailman, you got McHale.
Yep,
Kevin McHale. Let's see. Here we go. Hall of Famers by jersey number.
Wasn't Shaq 32 with the Heat?
Yeah, I knew he was 32. I just didn't know which team.
We'll mention 32 often for Mr. All right, here are the 32s in the... Oh, my God, duh. 32s in the Hall of Fame. We got this guy. The 32 who happened to make one of the most unbelievable plays in the history of the NFL playoffs. It is known as the Immaculate Reception.
Yep.
My nationality had an army made for him when he was running back for the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Fuck this guy.
Of course, Franco. Trust me, Steve. Two fucking Super Bowls, okay?
Yeah, so,
we're talking
the Franco Harris of the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Franco Harris of the Penn State. What's that? I try to forget that guy's name. Not Paterno, but the guy Sandusky. Yeah, the Franco Harris trying to figure out who actually did it.
What's wrong with us tonight? Donald Sterling, Sandusky, Voldemort. Yeah. What the fuck are we doing? Is this like the episode 666? What are we doing?
No, Harris was like the number one Sandusky apologist.
Yeah.
And my only hope is that his head was just so rattled with concussions that he thought it was a good idea to... Yeah, he was like OJ looking for the killers. He was like, I'm going to find out what's going on here. Nah, man. Lost all respect for him.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And of course, the other, finally a 32 that we can be proud of.
The OJ Sterling and
O.J. Sterling and
Franco Harris show.
And then, of course, you know, Marcus Allen apparently banged OJ's wife, and he was and Al Cowlings whispered it in his ear or whatever. Yep.
Jim Brown beat his wife.
Speaking of, that's what I was about to mention. Did Jim Brown really beat his wife?
Yeah.
Did he really? Wow, other than Magic, this number is all Magic. Magic didn't get AIDS from a dirty needle. He got it because he stuck his dirty needle into about 9,000 women in 9 years. So, what was it? The infamous massage table at the Fabulous Forum. That's what it was.
Or the infamous massage table at Mike McCarthy's Green Bay Packer office. I don't know if you've heard about that one lately.
Any 32s on the Packers? Oh, my God.
Who cares?
All right. All right, so guess what? We're done. All right. I hope everybody enjoyed this trip down the fucking – this trip to the gas chamber. Anyway.
This segment might only be for us, but gosh darn it, it is fun.
It's absolutely fun. And again, seriously, we got great numbers the next couple episodes, so we're excited. Yes.
And we will get to talk about Marcus Allen again next episode.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So he must have wore that number.
Yeah, okay. 33 at USC.
33 at USC. Okay, so I guess Voldemort's number wasn't retired yet. Okay. All right, guys, let's talk about what we really want to talk about. Enough of all these miscreants and vagabonds.
Wait, let's talk about professional wrestlers.
Yes, exactly. Isn't that the name of the show you're going to Saturday night, Steve?
Yes.
Miscreants and vagabonds? Nah. Guys, this is a huge weekend in professional wrestling. And we're very lucky. It's been a great summer of pro wrestling. I mean, we've had shows up the wazoo all over the place. WWE, AEW, New Japan, Ring of Honor, just shit all over the place. And this weekend, and this is one thing I will give AEW credit for. I will give them credit for kind of, you know, jacking up like holiday weekends that normally we just kind of cruise on. Of course, Double or Nothing is pretty much now every Saturday on Memorial Day, as long as AEW is open. And of course, this weekend is pretty much their WrestleMania weekend. I think it's safe to say. I think Double or Nothing's like their, you could consider either their Royal Rumble or their SummerSlam, but this weekend is most definitely their WrestleMania. We'll get to, of course, I'm talking about All Out, and Mr. Willie will be in attendance at the, what's it called? The Sears Center? Is that what it's called?
Yeah, it's the Sears Center in Hoffman Estates, Illinois, home of Mr. Redwater himself, Michael Vincent.
Uh-oh. You know what he's got, Steve? He's got a 97-disc set on all of O.J. Simpson's games now. It'd be a 97-disc set of Britt Baker's matches. Anyway, but that's not the only show. That is not the only show going on this weekend. Saturday is an epic day for wrestling, because not only do we have All Out in the evening, but you've got a double dip during the day. I found out today, I guess, from a friend of mine that actually my friend Mike, who I talk about often, and he will join us on a future main event, my good friend Mike Valenti and his brother Ralph, who do the Squared Circle Psychobabble podcast on YouTube. Great guys, and they plug us often just as much as we plug them. They'll probably plug us this weekend. They usually do when they do. They usually do a live stream of the pre-show of the AEW shows.
Yeah, cool.
That's
cool.
That is cool. Yeah, no, he's awesome. Mike's a great guy, and he will join us. Problem is he does trivia at a bar. He lives in Connecticut. He lives upstate. He lives near close where I grew up, but he does trivia on Wednesday. So we'll have to find a way to get him on another night. But anyway, we were talking today, and he let me know that one of the shows almost go chronologically. So we're going to cover the two afternoon shows very quickly, and then we'll cover, obviously, most of A block. We will cover the big show that Steve will be at. And then in the B block, finally, we will get to the newest installment of the New Japan Classic Match Picks. I had the shoe, and I had a couple of doozies. I know it's kind of dated now because the G1 Climax ended like 2 weeks ago, but still, it's always fun to talk about this guy, so we'll get to that in the B block. Three shows, gentlemen, this Saturday at 12:30 Eastern time from the Copper Box Arena in London, England. New Japan Pro Wrestling presents Royal Quest, which is actually kind of a cool poster and a cool name, I think. So it's 12:30 Eastern time. On you can see it on Fight TV, and of course it'll be I didn't know this. Did you know this, guys? The event will be streamed live on Fight TV and made available for on-demand viewing on New Japan Pro Wrestling World in September. So you can't watch it on the New Japan app.
Yeah, if you want to watch it live, you gotta put out those big Fight TV dollars,
or just wait a week.
Or just wait a week, or subscribe to Nefarious Means Cable.
Nefarious Donald Sterling Cable. No. what is how much is it? It can't be more than what, 30?
It's like 20, 25.
I was gonna say, I think it's 25, 30 bucks.
25. Here's a card. 8 matches. Here we go. Oh, this is great, Steve. I'm already looking ahead to the names. I think I'm okay. Ryusuke Taguchi, Shota Umino, and Ren Narita. Nice. We'll take on Roppongi 3K, which is, of course, Rocky Romero, Sho, and Yo, in a 6-man tag. Kota Ibushi and Juice will take on the Bullet Club, Takahashi and Hikuleo. Nicolio.
He's one of Haku's kids.
Oh, okay.
He's in a giant, but very green.
Big dude. Okay. Tag match. Chaos, which is, of course, Will Ospreay and Robbie Eagles, will take on Ishimori and El Fantasmo, the other half of the Bullet Club, or the other third of the Bullet Club, I guess, in a tag match. In another tag match, Los Ignorables Diapon, which is, of course, Naito and Sonata, will take on the other third of the Bullet Club, Jay White and Chase Owens, in a tag. Now the four title matches. Your IWGP Tag Team Champions, speaking of Haku's kids, the Gorillas of Destiny, Tama Tonga and Tonga Loa, defend against the winner of the Road to Royal Quest tournament, which I don't think has happened yet, right? It happens actually
maybe Friday. Early in the day. Okay.
It happens Friday. It is Aussie Open versus Josh Bodum and Shaw Samuels. That is the final. Aussie Open, which is Kyle Fletcher and Mark Davis, they advanced by beating the Radicals. No, not those Radicals, even though you mentioned Benoit a while ago. What is wrong with us tonight? Serendipitous evil. then they beat Dan Maloney and M.K. McKinnon in the semis.
You're
and now
listening to me here.
Yeah, I know, me too. And then
Open is very fun.
Yeah. And then they'll take on all right, now Bodum and Samuels defeated Dan McGee. Dan McGinn? Oh, he complained about something last night. And Curtis Chapman. Then they beat Gabriel Kidd and Sean Jackson.
Our Curtis Chapman?
Fit it. So you think Aussie Open wins that, Steve, you think?
It's the only one I know. I've heard of Shaw Samuels before. I don't know where. But yeah, I would like to see them. That'd be fun. It would give them a chance to you know, sometimes these guys in Rev Pro or these British companies get seen over here on these Japanese tours. There was a story that Chris Charlton and Kevin Kelly were saying during the G1 that Kenta brought Zack Sabre Jr. over to Japan when he had made a quick trip to Britain for a show like this. And then Zack Sabre beat Kenta in one of my favorite matches of the G1 tournament about a week or so ago. So I would like to see Aussie Open win because I've seen a little bit of them in the United States earlier this summer, and they seem fun.
So, okay.
Yeah. Why not? Right.
So if they win the tournament, they'll take on the Gorillas of Destiny for the IWGP.
And lose.
Yeah, exactly.
And they will lose.
Tomohiro Ishii will be defending the NEVER Openweight title against Kenta. And Wikipedia no longer capitalizes it, so does he not capitalize it anymore? I don't know. It's just Kenta, of course. Zack Sabre Jr. will defend the British heavyweight title against Mr. Tanahashi. And in the main event, my man, and I know I'm saying his name wrong and I don't really care, Kazuchika, because it just sounds better. Kazuchika sounds like a sneeze. I said that to my good friend Mike Valenti, who told me I kept saying it wrong, but I say it sexier. Kazuchika Okada, he's just Okada, will defend the world title against Minoru Suzuki. Probably Suzuki's last, like, hurrah, I would think.
Yeah, he's so fun.
Yeah, he is fun. We'll just go over this very quickly. I'll just ask one question, all of you. Nate, do you see any belts changing?
Not really. Maybe Kenta over Ishii, but not really.
Yeah, I can't see Tanahashi beating Zach. That would make no sense. What do you think, Steve?
Tanahashi in the last few weeks of the G1 was wondering whether he's broken down and done because he was just started losing, his knees were hurt, and so it seems like that's the story they're going with right now. Kenta joined the Bullet Club. I haven't seen it yet. I know it happened. Maybe that will happen. But Ishii just got the belt, and they seem to be setting up programs with him and Shingo Takagi of Los Ingobernables de Japón.
Yes.
And Taichi. So I think it'd be weird to switch it. But hey, whatever. If they're running with Kenta a little bit, then I don't see why they wouldn't just have rematches with him. That title means very little.
Mm.
It's basically like the U.S. title in WWE. Like, no one knows who has it.
Right. Yeah, I can't see anybody losing here. I mean, Okada's definitely not going to lose. I think Suzuki will give him a fun match, and they'll beat the shit out of each other. I'm sure it'll probably go about 20-25, but So anyway, that is show number one, Royal Quest, which will take place, again, I like the place, the Copper Box Arena in London, and it is live on Fight TV at 12:30 Eastern Time on Saturday. The second show of the day, which will be at 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Saturday, from Cardiff, and that is NXT UK TakeOver, and that'll be from the Motorpoint Arena in Cardiff, Wales. I kind of like the poster. So here's your card. Only five matches, so this is a quickie, like usual. Travis Banks will take on Noam Dar, who, by the way, we make fun of my friend Mike that he kind of looks like Noam Dar. He's not in his shape, though, believe me. One of my favorite guys, Dave Mastiff. Fucking love big fucking Haas guys with beards. Dave Mastiff takes on Joe Coffey in a last man standing match. That might be fun. A triple threat tag for the NXT UK tag team titles. Zach Gibson and James Drake, the champs, taking on Mark Andrews and Flash Morgan Webster against Gallus, which is Mark Coffey and Wolfgang. For the UK women's title, Toni Storm will defend against Kaylee Ray. And for the UK title, Walter will defend against the inaugural winner of the UK title, Tyler Bate. Fun little card here, guys. Now, I was saying today to a few people that usually NXT cards, whether it's UK or regular, at least one belt changes hands. Now, that, of course, did not happen at TakeOver in Bridgeport. Or, I'm sorry, TakeOver Toronto, where everybody retained. So I was wrong there. What do you give this card, Steve?
I have to be honest that I have just not been following UK TakeOver.
I haven't either.
I love Walter. Like, absolutely
too.
Love him.
I absolutely do, too.
And my 8-year-old loves him and goes around saying, Walter! And they've kind of reunited the Ringkampf association that they had mm-hmm. in Germany with Fabian Aichner and Marcel Barthel, who, I mean, don't ask me what their regular names were. I think Marcel was Axel Dieter Jr. And then Alexander Wolf, who was in, help me out here, Nate, Eric Young's group.
Sanity.
Yeah.
Sanity.
So he has kind of gone to the UK and joined their group too. So I think there could be a lot of chicanery. It sounds like Cesaro's going to show up.
Yeah. Huh?
So you have British Sonic Style with Dunn, Tyler Bate, and Trent Seven. You throw Cesaro in there, you got 4-on-4. That would be pretty sweet.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't it be something if that was like War Games?
That would kick ass.
Yeah,
they should, I mean, explode that show up like nobody's business. Well, at least we'll have NXT on USA for a few weeks leading up to the War Games. So I'm sure they're going to want to jack that card up by having the TV be very good. So,
yeah, that match is going to be awesome. Like I'll check that out. And if anyone's listening who has like ideas of matches to watch through NXT UK, like, you know, like a playlist of recommended matches, please feel free to pass them along, because I don't think I would be able to go through every single episode of the show, but I would like to see some of the good matches.
I know. In terms of any titles changing hands, the only one I could maybe see, because she's had the belt for a while, even though she's like the face of the franchise at the moment, I could see Kaylee Ray pulling off an upset and beating Toni Storm, maybe. Walter's not losing to Tyler Bate.
No.
I think Zip Gibson and Drake will keep the tag title. So I could see Kaylee Ray pulling off an upset here and maybe upsetting Toni Storm. Nate, what do you think?
I mean, it's possible, but I don't think it's probable. I think that especially on a show where at best you're the second most important show of the weekend.
Right.
And at worst, maybe you're third place, depending on the attitude of the fans out there.
Uh-huh.
I would wait to make that switch at a show where you got more eyeballs on you and the stage is more yours.
Good point. That's a good point. Would you agree with him, Steve?
Yeah, I would agree with him too. Is this like a really big takeover for them? I honestly don't know, and I apologize for my ignorance.
I honestly don't either. I guess it's a big deal. The first NXT takeover. Well, let's see.
They had one in January.
Yes, the one in January was in Blackpool, and Danny Belcher.
And then that was it. They just had the match at New York.
Mm-hmm.
Where Walter won.
Yes, I was there. That was a regular takeover. That wasn't, and that was,
yeah, that was the regular one.
That was Mania weekend. Now, Toni Storm actually won the belt from Rhea Ripley, Hachimachi, in Blackpool. So a title did change hands. Pete Dunne beat Joe Coffey by submission in that great UK title match. The match was almost 35 minutes. And in the finals of the tournament, that's where Gibson and Drake beat Mustache Mountain. So we haven't seen any real title changes or anything going on since January. So it's been a very stable 8 months in NXT UK, except for Pete Dunne losing to Walter WrestleMania weekend.
And honestly, if I am looking for maximum eyeballs, it might not even be a takeover where you make that happen. You might want to sprinkle some of these NXT UK guys and girls in on the show when NXT debuts on USA, because you've got more time to fill.
Oh, man, I would. Walter versus Cesaro is like, yeah, that's making me drool right now. That would be so much fun.
Yeah, I'm getting excited for that. Yeah, I agree.
I'm just writing that in my personal diary right now.
In your dream journal?
Are you journaling? Are you journaling, Steve? I'm saying to my goddaughter.
I can't even tell people to do it in my practice without like laughing. Like, I can't tell you to do something that I would never in a million years do.
I said to my goddaughter this morning, I said, since when did journaling become a verb? I thought it was, I'm journaling. I thought it was like, I write in my diary. What the fuck does journaling mean? Journaling become a verb. Anyway. So there's the two kind of undercard shows of the weekend. Royal Quest, presented by New Japan Pro Wrestling, and of course, WWE NXT UK TakeOver Cardiff. Now let's talk about the big show, the show that this gentleman, Mr. Willie, will be at with the children on Saturday night.
No children. We're leaving them at home.
It's you and them. Sisters. Look at that.
No, myself and our buddy Brett Carlson are doing our annual wrestling.
I love Brett Carlson. He's a good guy.
He's a good guy.
Look at me. Now I'm causing family shit. Whoa, I thought Scott said I was coming. Oh, you're screwing. That's right. Brendan will just throw a volleyball at my face. It's all good. anyway.
Nate,
so
Brendan struck Justin out in wiffle ball, and Justin's still complaining about it.
You know. Him and Roger Ragar came in, and I hit a ball into the street. So that's okay. So anyway. So, of course, the big show we're talking about is AEW's All Out. Big weekend. I think tomorrow night, Steve, does StarCast start tomorrow or Friday?
I think it starts tomorrow.
Okay. StarCast tomorrow.
Yeah.
You've got Conrad ambling around. We got Punk. all this stuff. I mean, it's a jacked up weekend.
Conrad Sterling out here.
he might be more popular than Punk in some circles. Who knows? Now, the big thing that was just added tomorrow night or tonight. Actually, if you're listening to this when it dropped Friday morning, tonight, 10 o'clock on TNT will be Countdown to All Out.
Oh, okay. Awesome. I didn't know that.
Yeah, no, that's pretty awesome. TNT is doing a 1-hour special Friday night. So if you're listening after, it already happened. But if you're listening to it as we first dropped the show, it's tonight, Friday. On TNT at 10 o'clock, Countdown to All Out, which is pretty cool. So that'll be awesome. There are 10 matches. It looks like two of them are on the pre-show.
Yes.
The two on the pre-show, Private Party will take on Angelico and Jack Evans. That might be actually might be a pretty good match.
Yeah.
And then the 21 woman casino battle royale, where the winner will receive a match for the inaugural AEW Women's Championship, which will be decided on the premiere episode of AEW on TNT on October 2nd. So it's one half of the number one contender slot. Now here's the proper card. Rio will take on Hikaru Shida. Darby Allin, Joey Janela, and Jimmy Havoc in a Cracker Barrel clash. Yes! Chicken and rice for everybody. I love chicken and rice, by the way. Cody will take on Sean Spears with Tully Blanchard as his manager. Sean Spears. The Lucha Brothers against the Young Bucks in an Escalera de la Muerte for that the AAA. Yes, for the AAA World Tag Team titles. Of course, the Lucha Brothers are champs. The Bucks dropped them sometime in the last, couple weeks or month down in Mexico. Best Friends against the Dark Order in a tag team match. The winners get a first-round bye. Sounds so WWE-ish. Gets a bye in the first round of the AEW Tag Team Title Tournament. A bye!
Especially when you remember that the Best Friends at one of the last two shows won a tag match to get into this match.
Yes!
Which leads to a bye.
Leads to a bye. God. And they say they don't do anything WWE does. Pac, who was pinching, we'll talk about this in a minute. Pac, who was, of course, pinch hitting for John Dean Ambroxley, will take on Kenny Omega. And in the main event for the inaugural AEW World Championship, Hangman Page against Chris Jericho. Top to bottom, not a bad card. Not a bad card at all. I'm looking forward to the Cracker Barrel clash because I want to see chicken and rice and T-bones and minestrone soup thrown everywhere. Maybe some checkers too. I shouldn't make fun of that because I actually love Cracker Barrel. But anyway, and I forgot one more match. There's a 6-man tag. The Luchasaurus, Jungle Boy, and Marco Stunt will take on SoCal Uncensored. Of course, Christopher Daniels, Frankie Kay, and my favorite AEW employee, Scorpio Sky. So 10 matches, 2 on the pre-show, and then 8 on card proper. I have seen 3 of the 4 AEW shows. Oh my God, I'm being favored. I watched Double or Nothing and I watched Fyter Fest. I was not home. I have not watched Fight for the Fallen. So I know what happened on the show. I just didn't watch it.
Yeah.
I think the card is balanced. I think it's pretty solid. Best Friends, Nate. They seem to be a team that could give the Bucks like 83 million stars. How big is this match with them against this Dark Order team that seems to be getting like no traction in the company?
Yeah, I would hope that this is a company where they are a little bit more proactive at times than WWE or Impact can be. Where if they get stuck with a bad idea, lots of times they'll try to, like, we can force it to make it right. Like, they're that couple that Steve might counsel where it's just not working. They're like, we got to stick together for the kids. You don't even like the kids. But I would hope that they would take a look at kind of the reaction that the Dark Order's gotten so far and give the win to the Best Friends, because I think in the immediate future, they can be a bigger player in the tag division. And that doesn't mean you have to give up on the Dark Order. Maybe you just kind of repackage them and season them a little bit.
Why isn't Dark Order getting over, Steve?
I think two reasons. A first reason, which we talked about after Fyter Fest, the two F shows just kind of tie together for me. Mm-hmm. No one really knew who they were, mm-hmm. unless you were a really hardcore fan. Right. And they couldn't really even say who they are. And plus, they were in Canada because they couldn't come to the U.S., so they weren't even in like Impact or Ring of Honor or anything like that.
Yeah.
So that was one part. Then you had like the really cheesy droid looking things, which are like, it was just a bad look for them. You know, at least put like maybe two or three that are in shape. None of them were even remotely in shape. So it just looks so bad. But if you watch the match at Fight for the Fallen, they were really good.
Yeah.
And they are a great team. And just having them on their own, I think, would be fine. Or if you really want to, you know, get some sort of minions or what have you, just get a couple of big brawny guys, you know, in your corner, just random hosses. I think they'll be fine. I can actually see them winning this match. And then, you know, Best Friends will still be in the tournament anyway. So maybe they'll have a rematch in like a second round or something like that. Because you got to have some heels win this show.
Yeah, no, I agree. What do you think of? I think a lot of it is the lack of the effects in the building. It's not transferring to the screen to the viewer at home. What do you think, Nate?
I think the big problem is they haven't had TV up until this point. And you can develop characters. You can develop stables when you have weekly television. And on these shows that have been kind of just one-off shows, the only things that are going to get a reaction are either great in-ring action or people that have a compelling story like Cody and Dustin.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, the Dark Order didn't have a compelling story. Like Steve said, they couldn't even really identify who these dudes were when they showed up. And while, you know, their match was good, it gets lost on a show with SCU, with the Bucks, with the Lucha Brothers, you know, with the Best Friends, quite frankly. And so with Evans and Angelico. And so when you're like the fifth or sixth best tag team in a stacked tag team division, and you don't have a good story behind you because you haven't had the television to tell the story, that those are two strikes against you before you've even stepped up to the plate.
Mm. Yeah, I agree. I think that Best Friends actually is going to win that match, and they will get their big bye. Let's talk about the Battle Royale. I think it's not a secret, at least for me, that Britt Baker is going to be in one half of that women's title match on October 2nd. I mean, she's clearly transitioned as the face of the women's division at the moment. You agree, disagree? I mean, she seems to be the face so far anyway. I like Allie, though. I like Allie. Who are the – have they announced who the women are in the – here we go. Yeah, so the announced participants – here we go. Is Nyla Rose, Britt Baker – Allie, speaking of, Brandi Rhodes, please. Teal Piper, Ivelisse. Oh, Ivelisse. She always gets screwed. She'll probably get hurt. Jazz. Big Swole, who, by the way, isn't that Cedric's wife?
Yes.
Yeah, that's Cedric's wife. Sadie Gibbs, Awesome Kong, and 11 other opponents to be determined.
I'm torn on this.
Yeah, I am too. What do you think, Steve?
I haven't heard it officially, but they made it seem, Meltzer made it seem like the Riho match is the winner of that match will be the other half of the championship match. And I'm going to say that's Riho because that's Kenny Omega's tag partner.
I don't know if I like that.
Yeah. Mm. And she's been in every show.
Yeah.
So at first I'm like, oh, well, it's got to be Kong, right? You got Glow re-released. Mm-hmm. She's been the vocal point. She's one of the focal points of the women's division. But then when Aja Kong showed up, you know, hey, maybe that's, you know, two people that might end up throwing each other out.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't really know. I could see Britt Baker has been the female face of this company. She's been on every single poster. Her shirt is like the one that is, the female shirt that's been selling that Pro Wrestling Tees keeps putting up. The men's battle royal, if you remember, that was a no doubter. Like, Hangman Page was going to win that match. especially after Pac had a pullout. There is, you know, there was really no doubt about who was going to win that. This one, there's a little more, there's a little bit more of a question where it could be a couple different people, and I'm thankful for that because last thing you want is a battle royal where you already need to know the winner.
Mm. So who's your pick?
Oh, you mean like I can't just talk around and pick everybody?
No.
Bobby Heenan?
All right, Corey Graves.
Bobby Heenan, and then I'll just go along as the show progresses and just keep changing it. I'll stick to Awesome Kong, and I'll say that I'm going to stick with her because I think she can win the title, and then like someone like Britt Baker or even Aja Kong. Britt Baker can be the one who chases.
I agree. What do you think, Nate?
I think this is going to be fun, and actually – I would have put this on the main card and put the Rio match on the pre-show.
Yeah. Yeah, I understand why this Battle Royale is not on the main card. I think it was a mistake to not have the men's one on the main card at Double or Nothing.
Mm-hmm. But let's assume that the Rio match is not for entrance into the title match. And let's just assume that that's a one-off. That's just a singles match. So we're looking at the women in this Battle Royal. I think Kong is going to have a good showing, but Aja Kong's probably going to cost her so they can keep that thing going. And I think you can have a great kind of secondary women's feud on the side between those two. And then you've always got this kind of looming specter of Kong for whoever wins the belt. I think Britt Baker is definitely going to be in the title match because she's one of the focal points of the division. She's easily one of the most marketable with their story to a mainstream audience. You know, you can put her on Conan and she fits with kind of, you know, this pretty girl who's a dentist, who's also a wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
Like that'll play in Middle America. Mm-hmm. But I don't think she wins the Battle Royal.
I don't think she does either.
I'm going to go with, I love Jazz being back, but I don't, and I love that, like, she's bald and has this badass look now, but I don't think Jazz is going to get it. It's cool that Till Piper's in this thing, and I hope this isn't just a one-off for her, but I'm going to go with Nyla Rose, because I think we're going to get Nyla Rose and Britt Baker for the title.
I could easily see Nyla Rose winning because she's got like a losing streak going on. Remember, wins and losses matter. I'm going to go with an upset pick here, and I'm sure it's going to piss people off, but I don't think it'll matter because they think they're kind of walking on air right now. But I think Brandy's going to win. That was the timer.
That was Brandy calling you.
That was a tornado coming through. I like. As much as she doesn't want to be Stephanie, she wants to be Stephanie. So I think she wins, believe it or not. Because I think Britt is going to be the inaugural women's champ. I'm going to slightly disagree with you guys, and I'll explain why later. But anyway, I think Britt's actually going to win. I think they're going to make it. I mean, I think Brandy's going to win. I think Britt's going to win the other half at some point between now and October 2nd. So who knows? Darby Allin has really impressed a lot of people after the match with Cody. I like him in this triple threat.
Yeah.
I like him to win this triple threat. What do you think, Nate?
Yeah, I could see that. A loss doesn't hurt Janela, and especially in a triple threat, you know, he can be protected. It'll be interesting to see what Jimmy Havoc brings to the table, because I think the three of them can do some pretty unique spots in this thing, and it'll just be a ridiculous, crazy, over-the-top type of match. But yeah, I think out of all three guys, the person with the most upside right now probably is Darby. I'd go with Darby.
Mm. What do you think, Steve?
That's my pick, too. I think this is going to be like ECW 2019. So it's going to be a barn burner. There's going to be some crazy moves. There's going to probably be some weapons. It might even be some blood. So, but I think, yeah, Darby Allin is a guy that they should really be pushing.
Yes, I agree. So I like them in that match too. The Lucha Brothers, I think, retain the AAA titles. I think the Bucks don't need belts at the moment.
No.
Cody and Sean Spears could be fun. I think it could be very violent as well. Who do you like in this one, Steve?
You know, I mentioned before that I think you need to have some heels win. I don't think you can just have, you know, Cody win every single feud that he's in right away. I think Sean Spears needs to win this one to cement himself as, you know, a solid heel. You have Tully Blanchard involved, so that will probably play a role in this. It's not going to be a clean victory, but I'm thinking that Spears is going to win. You can't have every single person on this show over
right
as a positive. So mm-hmm. you got MJF and Sean Spears at this point.
Mm. I agree. What do you think, Nate?
Yeah, because I think you need something to set up your TV. And
that's a big deal. That this show is a big deal for that right now.
Yeah.
It's mm-hmm. not just their big show. They need to set their TV up because that's what it's all about right now.
And I think, you know, Cody's strong suit is in the storytelling. And so I think, you know, with Tully and with Dustin on the peripheral, you can have some really cool vignettes and really get us excited for the rematch when they get to TV.
Right. I agree. Now, we do not have John, Dean, and Broxley, which really sucks for them because the whole purpose of him debuting at Double or Nothing and being at Fyter Fest and is for this moment, for this match. This was the showcase match. It was on the fucking posters and stuff. And then he gets hurt because New Japan overworked him.
What
it seems like anyway.
He already had that issue before.
I'm being sarcastic, Steve. I'm not blaming him.
Okay,
I'm just saying.
Gotcha.
Yeah. No, I'm not blaming. No. I'm not blaming them at all. I think AEW thinks that New Japan overworked him. So now you have Pac, who was supposed to wrestle Hangman Page at Double or Nothing, but Dragon Gate stuck its fucking nose where it didn't belong. Or maybe it did belong, who knows. And now we have Pac here. Three questions. Number one, how much does this match switch hurt AEW on this night? B, who wins? And C, was Pac going to be involved in this all along? And now he's actually got to be in the match, but he was going to be somewhere in Chicago? Steve, I'll start with you.
What was he again? I'm thinking about B and C here.
What color are the tights going to... No, I'm only kidding. How much is not having Moxley here hurt?
I think it hurts, I would say, a moderate amount, which is less than I thought it did originally.
Mm.
Because he's coming back. He's going to be out for a few weeks. You're still going to be able to do this feud.
Yeah,
and I'm just looking for silver linings here. It might build more anticipation. I think it's going to hurt pay-per-view buys because this was the big hot feud, you know, like your blood feud that you were really building with two stars, with a recognizable name in Ambrose, you know, Moxley coming over.
Right.
Especially now hot off his G1 where he looked pretty good and he adjusted his style. And Omega's been, you know, pretty much laying low, only having a couple of matches this entire year. So it was being built up. So from a storyline perspective, long-term will be okay. For the case of this show, it does kind of suck. They have a pretty good replacement in Pac. I had read that he was not going to be part of the show. You know, there was, you know, the talk that Dragon Gate originally didn't want him to, or for the first show, because he was supposed to go against Hangman Page. I'm glad that he's there. I think it's going to be a really good match.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not going to have that intense heat and fire that the Moxley Omega match would have had. So,
right,
it's a moderate disappointment. I'm disappointed being there live, though I'm looking forward to this match as like an exhibition.
Right. Okay. Same three questions to you, Nate, to repeat. Does not having Moxley hurt the show? Who wins this match? And do you think Pac was going to be involved somehow anyway, and he just happens to be in another role now?
Well, I'll take the last one first. I don't think that he was going to be involved in this show. I think he was going to be maybe something they would save in their back pocket. Again, looking towards October. And I think Steve hit on it. This is bad in the sense that you don't get the match that was advertised, the match that you were building to. But I actually think it could work in their favor. As long as the rest of the show pans out the way it looks like it could on paper, you've now got Dean Ambrose, Jon Moxley in your pocket for the debut on TNT. And that's going to be something you can use as a selling point. And so I think it's a way to make lemonade out of lemons. Yes, it hurts for the people that bought tickets thinking they were going to see Jon Moxley, but there's so much on this card that those fans are going to eat up anyway, that it's like, oh, I wish I would have had that fourth helping of ice cream. But, you know, these other three scoops were pretty damn good. I think where it will hurt, and Steve touched on it, is the buy rate. I don't know to what extent, you know, whether this is something that'll cause a 10% drop or a 25% drop, but I do think it will affect the buy rates. But other than that, I think this is, you know, it's a situation where you know he's going to come back. You know he's going to come back sooner rather than later. And so if he was going to get hurt, this is probably the best case scenario for him getting hurt. Mm. And in terms of who wins the match, I think we're going to have a heel winning the main event. So let's give it to Kenny here. He needs some wins.
Yep. I agree, because I think we're all on the same page with... Oh, did you see how I did that? Huh? You like how I did that? with our main event. For a long time, just because they spent so much time telling the story all summer long, I really thought Hangman Page was going to be the inaugural AEW champion. I'm not sold on that now. I think from a marketing perspective, and maybe to have Page keep chasing, I think Chris Jericho wins this match and becomes the first AEW champion.
Mm-hmm.
You guys have both kind of started to sell me on it throughout the summer as we've been doing our shows. And, I think I'm ready to be comfortable in my skin with that opinion. What do you think, Nate?
Yeah, I mean, it just makes sense from a multitude of standpoints. From a storyline perspective, the chase is almost always better than, you know, actually winning the thing and then being the defending champion. And so I think with TV, you've got time to build this story and time to get viewers familiar with Adam Page. But from a business standpoint, it also makes sense for Jericho to win, because he's much more marketable at this point than mm-hmm. Hangman Page. He's somebody, again, you can put on the NBA on TNT, and you can have him sitting next right to Marv Albert. We're here with Chris Jericho. Yes. you know, he's somebody you can put on daytime talk shows. He's somebody that you can put on Ellen. Hangman Page can't go on Ellen. So to me, it just makes sense to have.
I think we got our title right there.
Episode Page can't go on Ellen. but also
right now,
it gives like immediate credibility to the belt. I know some listeners might be like, this company should be all about the new generation, and why are we going back to the old standards? And it's because the old standards can sometimes be the best thing when you're trying to establish your name.
Yep, I agree.
Because people will pay for familiarity.
I agree 100%. I agree 100%. Steve, your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree. I was like you, Scott, like where I thought initially, oh, yeah, it's obviously going to Hangman Page. But as we talked over these last couple of months, that's where it makes the most sense for the reasons that Nate brought up. And like we said with the women's match, like that's how you establish your young stars. You're right. Giving them, you're putting them in this, you know, important opportunity. He's going to come up just short.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Paige will be respected. He'll get the big standing O at the end. And now you have at least one person who can chase Jericho. And that's right. How you will establish your younger stars, have them start coming back and taking on these big guys. It is like, and this is not to take a shot at the WWE right now, but that they've kind of done in the reverse, where they'll build the big guy, the young guys, in order to, you know, have them be defeated by, you know, Undertaker or Triple H, you know, coming up for their or Goldberg to, or Lesnar to make better examples, actually. And then they don't go anywhere.
Right.
So, you know, this is, if this is what they're thinking, like, we want to be different. Well, then you have your big guys and then you use them to lift up your younger guys and then put them over, because Jericho's not going to be wrestling forever.
Right. No, that's a good point. And I think the more things, and again, we've been talking about it, even though this is technically their WrestleMania, everything's leading towards October 2nd, that Wednesday night. Yeah. So I think you need a lot of open-ended stuff, and heels winning leaves things open-ended. And that's why I agree with you, Nate, is it's more looking ahead. Does that take away, one last question and we'll go to break. Does that philosophy take away from the specialness of the show? Steve, I'll start with you. The fact that philosophically they have to look ahead to the TV, does that take a little bit away from this show, that maybe instead of this being a WrestleMania where we have definitive ends, it's a means to an end to get to TV? Does that take away from the specialness of the show?
Not this time. I think if it were done like WCW, where it was like a random pay-per-view in the middle of the year, you know, stay tuned on Nitro for everything like that, I would be against it. But this is the first show of a brand new company.
Mm-hmm.
So they are going to need people to start turning in and be interested and start developing an audience, so that I'm going to go to this show and I'm going to have a good time. And I've seen a couple other shows, and then tell a couple people, you know, hey, like, you should check this out. It's on TNT. And I've already done that. I've talked to just random people. And that, you know, friends who maybe have lapsed a little bit on wrestling, it's like, yeah, I'm going to this thing and it's a new league and they're going to be on TNT in October. And, you know, I'm going to give it a shot. Sounds like it's going to be fun. And so by selling to like those hardcore people like us, building up to the TV, like, hey, this is what's going to happen. And you might get some new faces tuning in, I should say.
Yeah, this is, to use a political analogy, this is the primaries right here. You know, they're playing to the base. They know they've got the hardcores in there. They know they've got Steve's vote. You know, they know they've got the vote of every person that bought a ticket to go to the Sears Center. But as important as it is to do well in the primaries, what's more important is how you do in the general, and that's what TNT is, where you're expanding to the largest possible audience you can get at this time. And it's got to be a situation where, much like, you know, to use another, I'm stacking analogies here, Scotty.
You're building a condo of analogies.
Like phase one of the Marvel movies, they were all solid individual movies. Even Incredible Hulk, it was solid.
That's kind of a loose brick.
But
that's a thing.
Yes.
but it was all culminating to the Avengers. And so, yes, you're telling your own story in Iron Man. You're telling your own story in Captain America. But it all has to lead somewhere. And that's what TV is. It's the culmination of All In. It's the culmination of Fighter Fest, Fight for the Fallen. It's the culmination of Double or Nothing. It's the culmination of All Out. This has all been leading up to when we get on TNT and we can show everybody what we can do.
So are you saying that Christian Gillibrand is not going to be on the season or series premiere of AEW?
I was hoping that Ty Burrell would show up like he did in Incredible Hulk for some reason. But he's on the other network. Maybe he'll show up on NXT. we'll get a Phil Dunphy cameo in the crowd.
Oh, do you know who that is?
You know who that is? That's Modern Family's Phil Dunphy.
He might have been on Tough Enough. Anyway, all right. So what a day Saturday. Steve, we expect tremendous reports when you return, and we hope you have a fun time. Well, you're staying. Yeah. You're coming in the B block, but we want you to have a fun time anyway. And stay tuned. He'll
be having his own private party.
With his best friends. And stay here to PlaceBeNation.com and the PlaceBeNation Wrestling feed. Saturday evening, we will have a reaction show sponsored by the Main Event. We won't tell you who's on, but we do have a reaction show in the works. So stay tuned Saturday night after the show to the Place B Nation feed, and we'll have a reaction show up. All right, guys, fun Saturday coming up, and we'll talk about all the results on our next show. When we return, though, we're going to go back in time to two different times in history. I know the G1 Climax has already ended, and you know we're a little late to the party, but scheduling happened. When we return, our newest installment of the New Japan Classic Match Pick, we go back to two separate G1 Climaxes in two different decades and take a look at arguably one of the greatest workers of all time. Brother Nate, Brother Steve, myself, we go to Japan, not Japan, after this.
Because?
Because you're not Ignoble.
Her name is Riho, and she dances across the sand.
Consideration paid for by the following.
Place B Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over two dozen podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceBNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place B Nation Wrestling feed, we dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place B Nation pop feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content, offering tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all these current shows, plus archives of our previous podcasts over the past 8 years, as well by subscribing to our feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available at PlaceBNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using www.placetobination.com/Amazon while doing your online shopping. And be sure to join us at our forum at bigelow34.proboards.com for all sorts of wrestling, sports, and pop culture discussion each and every day, where you can make your voice heard. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceBNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
We are back on episode number 132 of Place B Nation's main event. So stop pacing, time wasting. I got a friend with a pole in the basement. I'm just kidding, like Jason. Just gonna let that sit there, Scotty. Just gonna let that sit there so you can marvel at the way we use Nelly to get back to Jason Kidd, who wore number 32. it all comes together here on the main event.
Oh my God.
But yes, we are back. We had a great discussion in the A block, and we've got a great discussion on tap here in the B block with our New Japan Classic match picks. But real quick. For those that want more of that type of wit and cultural connection, you can check me out on the Kings of Sport Patreon. Myself and Marcus Vandenberg, soon a father to be. He's got a little king on the way. Maybe
Yes. Maybe
as soon as this week. We'll find out. So
Prince.
Shout out to Marcus and his wife, and we'll see if Simba will be held aloft the mountainside here pretty soon. But
Splash Mountain.
Yes, I'm surprised he's not at Disney. If they had a medical facility at Disney, that's where he'd be.
Yeah, give birth to the Disney princess.
Asshole. Mulan is just there as a nurse. Just push. But yeah, check out the Kings of Sport. Patreon.com/Kings of Sport. And we got a bunch of different tiers and a bunch of bonus shows, politics, sports, Marvel reviews, a bunch of stuff up there for the good people.
That is tremendous. And, of course, placemenation.com is your home for everything pop culture. Let's take a quick look at what's going on the pop and the wrestling feeds. On the placemenation pop feed, got a lot of stuff going on. Hard Traveling Fanboys review The Boys Volume 1 by Garth Ennis and Derek Robertson in this month's edition of The Long Book Hunters. On DC For You, Russell and Todd conclude Justice League month with the hilarious hijinks found in the network TV special from 1979, Legends of the Superheroes, The Roast, which had Burt Ward and Adam West in it as well. On the inaugural sports edition of Looking Forward, Looking Back, Andy is joined by the Cowboy Roger Morissette, Peter Winston, and myself, yours truly, to look forward and preview the upcoming NFL season, as well as look back and analyze the most recent seasons in the NBA and the NHL. The year of pop...
It's a whole group of people I just saw.
I know, right? The year in pop returns. Andy and myself being joined by Mr. Arsenio D'Amato and the Doctor, Dr. G. George Urbelino, to discuss the new sports and pop culture of a sexy year that is 1977. And on a new Sunday Groove, David and guest Andy Helene discuss their personal Desert Island Discs. Steve's, of course, is Bop, that awesome German band.
Before we go on, I have breaking news here because I am packing. I went to quite possibly the whitest place I have been to in quite a long time, and that would be the Sarah McLachlan concert in Milwaukee.
God.
And I am wearing my Sarah McLachlan shirt to All Out because why the hell not? So breaking news, look for the guy in the Sarah McLachlan shirt.
I'm telling you right now, I am not playing Adia as a bed tonight, so...
Oh, I love that's
Steve,
a rough one.
Absolutely not.
I thought we were going out with In the Arms of Angelico.
I will remember you because I think I'm Mick Foley. I can't believe you own it. Yeah, I can't believe you own a Sarah McLachlan shirt. Over on our wrestling feed here on the Place B podcast this past week, actually, myself, Mr. Zero, and Peter Winston, I'm always on with that fucking guy, take a look at the last Saturday night's main event of 1989. I'm literally always on with him. Crazy. We talked to Ben Zanny by accident earlier tonight, Steve Willey. And Ben has a football-themed episode of Row 1 Seat. Did I just have puberty? Football. Better than diamond rings. Wildcats. We got to do a watch for that. You, me, and the three of us and Andy Atherton, we have to do a laugh in theater of Wildcats because that movie's great. Anyway, Ben Zanny, football-themed episode of Row 1 Seat 1 with a pair of guests to discuss the Patriots and the Dolphins. On episode three of the Extreme Three Way Dance, which is later this week, they already did this one. PIC, Mr. Rosero, Mr. D'Amato, and Mrs. Smith run down the entire month of ECW Hardcore TV following the night the line was crossed. I just listened to that episode, by the way. It was very, very good. And on episode seven of You Don't Know Billy Jack, Drew introduces Jordan to Saruta versus Tenayru from June of 1989. Of course, go to placemenation.com for all the tributes we've done to 1994. Lots of great content. All right, guys. The greatest song of the 80s tournament continues. Four polls a day now because we're in round three. Here were today's matchups. Ready? Jack and Diane versus West End Girls. I hate both these songs, actually. I think I voted for Pet Shop Boys. I am not the biggest John Mellencamp fan.
I mean, Jack and Diane is obviously the more iconic of the two,
right?
But I tend to lean towards songs where the singer is barely singing. he's just talking. Like the only time he actually sings is on the chorus. So I'm going with West End Girls.
Steve, I know who Steve voted for. He's got a Pet Shop Boys shirt.
I did vote for West. You know, if I was 17, 18 years old, I think I would have voted for Mellencamp there. That is like the song that every 16-year-old female plays. But West End Girls is a pretty great song in terms of 80s. It's got the sound, that 80s sound to it with the synth.
Oh, yeah. All right. Give Me All Your Lovin' by ZZ Top versus Bust a Move. Young MC. High Class Luncheon.
Did we have Bust a Move in our last episode?
First round? For following.
Yeah. And I'm keeping it going. You know, ZZ Top is fine. But again, you play that first
You get that first baseline. You get the "It takes two to make a things go right." I mean, it's in your head. It's just quintessential dance song.
Yeah, bust a move. No, not even close.
Yeah.
Okay. The next one was today. Metallica, Master of Puppets versus Fine Young Cannibals, She Drives Me Crazy. This was a no-brainer for me because I fucking hate Fine Young Cannibals. So I voted for Master of Puppets.
I dragged on this one, and let me tell you why. Master of Puppets, obviously a better song. Metallica, yeah, right? But Fine Young Cannibals is like... That's like laughably good 80s. Like, ugh. So bad it's good.
Mm.
I ultimately took Master of Puppets, but it was pretty hard.
Wow.
It was Fine Young Cannibals someone we talked about last time, too?
I don't think so. I remembered having a talk about that. I don't
think so. You look up Fine Young Cannibals when they were on Saturday Night Live during this time. This song was, like, She Drives Me Crazy. They did really good. The second song that they played, and I don't remember if it was Good Thing or some other song that never made a hit.
It had to be a Good Thing because they only had two songs, Steve.
Yeah, but it was quite possibly the worst ever Saturday Night Live music performance. It was so bad. I don't
Until
know
everyone
if it was
in the last
drunk
10 years.
Or high. It is a must watch. Fine Young Cannibals, Saturday Night Live. They only made one appearance because probably no one wanted them after that.
Wow.
I felt bad. It was that bad.
Wow.
One of my favorite, I'll top your sketch show with another sketch show, Steve Willie. One of my favorite In Living Color sketches is when they're doing like a Soul Train parody.
Mm-hmm.
And Damon Wayans.
I remember this.
And they're playing like Fine Young Cannibals.
Yep.
And they're like, ladies and gentlemen, give it up for one fine mammal. that's not our name.
I do remember that.
But yeah, obviously, Metallica is a better band and Master of Puppets is a better song, but if we're going by the guidelines of what's quintessentially 80s, I almost had to give it to Fine Young Cannibals on this one. Like, it was close, like Steve said.
Yeah, I could have gone either way.
Like, yeah. That's, you put that song in and it's instantly, you know what era you're in.
And I'm hitting my false. I'm going for falsetto as soon as I hear it.
I just can't. That and Georgia Satellites, and I got yelled at for that already, but I know that song too.
Who yelled at you for that?
I don't remember who. Some Southerner. It's either Nick Duke or Phillips or...
You're all wrong.
Maybe it's Jenny. I don't know. No, it wasn't her.
You're all wrong.
I forgot who it was.
Team Scott.
Thank you. This one broke my heart, and I actually almost was... I was getting a little touchy this morning. Limelight by Rush against Pour Some Sugar on Me by Def Leppard. I know Pour Some Sugar on Me is Pour Some Sugar on Me. I get that. I'm not fucking stupid. But it's fucking Limelight, dude. I mean, this is like quintessential, tremendous early 80s Rush. This isn't like garbage like Grace Under Pressure or some of that shit they did in the late 80s. This is like, or even in the last few years. This is like legit. Limelight's legit. And the fact that right now it's losing 74-26 is fucking killing me. Killing me. Mm. But I get it. It's Pour Some Fucking Sugar on Me. I'm not stupid, but it still sucks. It still sucks, D. Willie. I need help. Counsel me. It sucks.
I was at an open house today for a school, kind of kissing babies and shaking hands and advertising myself. And I saw probably, I'm going to guess, a 9-year-old boy with like long blonde hair. A purple backpack with some sort of LOL characters. I'm not aware of these characters. It looked kind of like Powerpuff Girls 2019. And on the front, he was wearing a Def Leppard shirt. And I'm like, this is the coolest kid I have ever seen in my life. Def Leppard. Like a backpack that probably caters more towards girls. And I'm like, this kid is cool. That's all I gotta say. I'd pick Def Leppard. I'm not a big Rush or Def Leppard fan. I gotta be honest with that.
You know,
Tom Sawyer's great.
You know what would have made the kid cooler if he had a moving pictures t-shirt. Then he would have been smarter than everybody else and cool at the same time.
I mean, Scotty, I'm a feminist, Scotty. I love women, and no song in the history of the 80s helped more women work their way through college than Pour Some Sugar on Me.
Equal opportunity workplace. You're right. I remember hearing this song in many diners. I mean, what? Sure. Anyway, continue following us on the Facebook page for the greatest song of the 80s tournament. It's been a lot of fun. All right, guys. Let's dive in to this week's edition of the New Japan Classic Match Picks. I had the Shu this week. And because this August, of course, was the G1 Climax, I decided that I wanted to pick a couple of G1 Climax finals matches. And I also wanted to talk about a guy who's arguably, and it's a shame we couldn't get Johnny Reckless on tonight, because this is one of his favorite guys too. Arguably one of my favorite Japanese wrestlers of all time. And this is pre-NWO, by the way. I am talking about Mr. Masahiro Chono. He's been maybe one of my top like three favorite Japanese guys ever. I like my Japanese wrestlers like I like my American wrestlers. I like big, thick, Haas guys. And, you know, of course, thank God we're not on the Place to Be podcast, because that phrase would be in the fucking open. But anyway, I've never been, I mean, I like, you know, athletic flip-flop wrestlers, but I've always been like a Chono, Hashimoto, guys that just grind you into dirt. And no one did that better than Chono. So I decided tonight to pick, because he is a five-time G1 Climax winner, I figured it'd be fun to bookend his G1 Climax career by talking about his first finals win and his last finals win. So let us go back, gentlemen, to when the G1 Climax only took a week. There was also less guys. August 7th through the 11th, 1991. The very first year that the tournament was actually called the G1 Climax. Before that, it was called the... Actually, there was no tournament in 1990, but it was called the World Cup in 89, and before that, it was the International Wrestling Grand Prix. So, in 1991, there were only eight wrestlers in the G1. Here's the eight, and this eight guys, I don't know what you want to say, but this is fucking, I mean, this is, I could watch this tournament a million times. Block A, ready for this? Keiji Muto, not the great Muta, Keiji Muto, it's kind of like, you know, Finn Balor. Tatsumi Fujinami, Scott Norton, and Big Van Vader. On the B block, Masachono, Shinya Hashimoto, Crusher,
Brutus Beefcake,
Coco Beware, no. Crusher, and that's not even a joke, and finally, Riki Choshu.
Yeah, that's a hell of a tournament.
That's like eight fucking studs right there.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of, and I got to look it up now, maybe I should have added this match. The B block ended up being tied. Chono and Hashimoto tied at 5 points apiece. So the two of them had to have a decision off. So Chono and Hashimoto wrestled anyway. And Hashimoto actually... yes, this match ended in a 30-minute draw. So they wrestled 30 minutes during the tournament, didn't have a winner, and then had to wrestle again in the B block. And Chono won it in 15-50 with a submission. Keiji Muto won the A block with 4 points. So your final for the inaugural tournament, officially branded the G1 Climax, Keiji Muto and Masa Chono. Again, probably, and we know how big Muta fans we all are. Muda Mudo, both. This was obviously Chono's coming out party. Made it to the final. Won the tiebreaker against Hashimoto in what was probably a fucking amazing match. I mean, hell, they wrestled a 30-minute draw. Muda was the more experienced guy at the time, so he was probably the favorite. Remember, this is 2 years removed from his epic feud with your boy Sting, Nate, in 1989. Yep. If you didn't know ahead of time, Steve, what would you have expected out of this match?
I would have expected Muto to be using a ton of speed because, as we would see in America, that was the kind of Muto we would get. And I would expect Chono to be going for big home run shot kicks, elbows, and such.
What do you think, Nate? If you had no idea.
Steve's right on. If your only exposure to Muda was from the NWA, you would expect a much more up-tempo style. You'd expect a little bit more high-flying, more theatrics that went along with the Muda character in the late 80s. But this is a match I've seen a couple times, and I also went back, want to give a shout-out to W.H. Park over at Post Wrestling. Who just finished the series on all the main events of the G1. And I went back and listened to his episode on this one. And it's like, yeah, like this was kind of the perfect tone setter for what this tournament was back then and what it would grow into.
Of course, they would expand it and add more guys down the line. This match was so much fun to watch. I think a lot of people might have been bored to tears. I wholeheartedly disagree. I had said before we went on the air or before we started that watching this match reminds me of like when Taker has a heel and he's either driving his elbow in your ribs or he's kind of grabbing your side in an abdominal stretch, like those kind of things. That's exactly what this match reminded me of. We had some high flies, we had some kicks and stuff, but pretty much what it was the Muda lock. And just various leg and arm twistings and going and things pointing in places it shouldn't be and directions it shouldn't be. But they were just on the ground just torquing each other. It was amazing. It was fun to watch. This match kind of, when I first watched it years ago and I watched it again, why I enjoy Chono so much and why I find him so different than your everyday run-of-the-mill, New Japan guy that's not Inoki. He has no problem telling the story on the ground. You know what I mean, Nate? Instead of flying around and all that kind of stuff, he tells the story within the four rope walls.
Yeah.
You get what I'm saying?
Well, he's very methodical and deliberate, and everything that he does is impactful. And it's done for a reason, and it's done for effect. And so I think if you only knew Chono from his occasional appearances in WCW, you would know that this was what this guy was capable of, because in WCW he was more of a character who just kind of hit big kicks. But here we get to see a little bit more of the technical aspect of what he can bring to the table.
Right. What do you think, Steve?
I don't know. What was the question here? I'm getting lost in Nate's breaking down of...
What I said about Chono just being your atypical New Japan worker at that time. Although Hashimoto wasn't either, I suppose.
Yeah, I was just going to say Hashimoto, like...
Well, most of these guys, Norton, Vader, I guess half this group is grinders.
Well, I would disagree with that, because Norton and Vader, like Bigelow's a little bit more athletic, but they were, throw some forearms and powerbomb some dudes. Whereas Chono is going to be more of, you know, kicks and knees while the guy is down, you know, slap on an STF and yank back on the neck. But they're not like, this is an extreme comparison, but like a Zack Sabre Jr. who's just wrapping you in different submissions. Where Muto is kind of this not quite a junior, not quite a big heavyweight guy, just an all-around great, athlete. Like, like I would say a modern-day comp would be like a Tanahashi, like someone who can do everything decently. Obviously, Tanahashi is a different era, but, you know, Muto could do a little bit of everything.
Same.
Like, yeah, really, really well.
Right. And they told the story on the ground, and then that Muto lock was on for what?
It's a good minute and a half, 2 minutes.
Yeah. And then finally, Chono wins his first G1 with a sloppy, awesome power bomb, and gets the win. And then they shake hands at the end, and Chono gets the streamers, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I really like the finishing sequence because the match went back and forth. It was pretty even, and then Muta went for the moonsault, and Chono got the knees up. And it's like if Muta connects, he could have easily won this match. But Chono just had enough left in the tank to get the knees up, and then, like you said, hit him up with that power bomb, and that was a wrap.
Yeah. It was just so much fun to watch. And do you feel Muto wrestles differently? I mean, I don't want to get into the whole, like, you know, Finn Balor thing, but do you feel like, I'll start with you, Steve. Do you feel like Muto wrestles differently without the paint?
Yeah. Yeah, and I think he probably wrestles differently in America versus versus Japan as well. You know, and in the great Muto role, he's trying to sell to a United States audience where, I mean, let's be honest, especially at that time, your Japanese competitor is trying to portray in a certain way. You know, he wasn't the first Japanese wrestler to come over with the great in front of his name and spitting liquid all over the place.
Right.
Whereas, you know, in Japan, when he's Muto, especially at this time frame, he's just kind of classic New Japan. You know, not a strong style as Chono, but, you know, like I said, just a wide variety of offense and defense.
Yeah, I think that's a great point Steve hit on right there, Scotty. I think, yes, there's a difference with the paint and without the paint, but I think even bigger is where he's wrestling. Because even now, like, he was just in Impact earlier this year. And, you know, the knees are shot. He can't do what he used to do in terms of high flying and the quick style. But it was all building up to that miss spot. And he's much more theatrical when he's stateside than he tends to be in New Japan or even when he was in All Japan.
Right. Yeah, and I mean, he fit in like a glove with Chono's grinding offense and strikes and getting on the ground and twisting joints and arms and knees and ankles. And it was just a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. And so Masahiro Chono wins his first of his 5 G1 Climax wins. He would be the first non-Inoki to win back-to-back. Inoki won it back-to-back a fuck ton of times. 74-75, then he won it 4 straight times from 78 to 81, then he won it in 84, then he won it from 86 to 88. I mean, it is his tournament. He can do what the fuck he wants. as we said, Chono won it 91. A year later, that is actually it's a full-blown tournament. It was a 16-man elimination tournament, and it was also for the vacant NWA Heavyweight Championship. Of course, they were working in concert with WCW. He beat Rick Rude in the final in what was a fucking awesome match. He would lose in the semi. They did it again a year later, and he would lose in the semis to Hiroshi Hase, who would end up losing to Fujinami. They'd go back to the round robin in 1994, and that's when he would win his third title. He would finish with 8 points in the A block, and he defeated Power Warrior, which of course was Kensuke Sasaki.
Yep.
By the way, there were 12 in this tournament. The A block was Chono, Muto, Choshu, Yoshiaki Yatsu, Yoshiaki Fujiwara, and Osamu Kido. And the B block was Power Warrior, Hiroshi Hase, Hashimoto, Fujinami, Shiro Koshinaka, and Takayuki Izuka. He would then win his fourth 8 years later in 2002, where he would defeat Yoshihiro Takayama in the final. And then he would win his final, and that's what we'll talk about now. His final G1 climax would be in 2005. It would be the more familiar 16-man format now. Now, as we all know, guys, the mid-2000s in New Japan was a little shaky. just a little. Here were the 12 guys, or 16 guys. In the A block, Masachono, Toshiaki Kawada, Yuji Nagata, Hiroyoshi Tenzan, Minoru Suzuki, Kendo Kashin, Osamu Nishimura, and Tatsumi Fujinami. In the B block, it was Kazuyuki Fujita, this guy named Naka something or other, I don't know, he likes violins, Manabu Nakanishi, Hiroshi Tanahashi.
Oh, Nakazawa.
Nakazawa. Yutaka Yoshi, Tatutoshi Goto, Toriyanu, he was still in these tournaments, and Togi Makabe. Chono beat Nakamura in one semifinal. Fujita beat Kawada in the other one. So the 2005 G1 Climax Final was Chono and Fujita. And in a match that was only 8:52, Chono, who of course is 14 years older than what we just saw after the NWO run, and he was much more heelish looking. He had the black tights and the glasses and everything and the full-blown, you know, Fu Manchu, although he had that 91 too. This match was a little different, obviously paced differently, older guy. He would rip off his tights to show the knee brace, and then he'd use the knee brace to fucking stick it in Fujita's confusing face. It really was. I don't know if this was supposed to be a last gasp for Chono. I didn't expect him to win this when I watched it. Steve, your overall thoughts on the match, and what were your thoughts on Chono winning this late in his career? And the match itself.
The match was strange to me only because this is a period I don't know much of. I know that, just doing some research, that it was kind of when Inoki was enamored with MMA and, you know, the beginning of UFC. And so that was what Fujita was doing there. It was a weird match. The fact that it was so short for a G1 final, mm-hmm. when you're seeing, you know, 30 minute, 35 minute, mm-hmm. you know, even the one we just saw was in the upper 20s, I believe. And it was sloppy, but it was kind of supposed to be sloppy because it was supposed to be more realistic. Fujita was just, you know, throwing in knees. He wouldn't shake hands. He was just kind of being a dick, really. You know, like there was a point where Fujita just hits his knee on the post, like, you know, Chono is on the post, and it's like the spot that everybody does where, like, they hit it or whatever, and he hit his knee on the post hard, and he basically no-sold it.
Yeah.
Which is supposed to be like a knock you out type move. So it was like one of those work shoot style matches that are coming back in vogue. Chono just had no answer to the MMA style, and it felt like he was getting beat up for a long time until he realized the match was over 8:50 or only 8:50. That the one thing, and I had texted you about this earlier in the day, that blew my mind was like when Chono ripped those tights, like you said,
That was the coolest thing. One of the coolest things I'd ever seen.
Me too.
I've never seen that happen before. Like, I've seen people, it's popular now, like, you pull down your knee pad to reveal your bare knee so you get bone on bone. But he ripped his entire pants to show his knee brace. Yep. And then instead of doing regular Shining Wizards, he's doing these shiny Yakuza kicks. Where he hits him with the heel or the ball of his foot. I'm like, well, what's the point? he did like once or twice toward the end give him a knee, but it just made no sense. I mean it was I guess fun. I liked the STF that he put on, and he really yanked back and rolled them back. Yeah, it was Fujita no selling everything for 6 minutes, and all of a sudden he got pinned.
Yeah.
And kicked out on three, by the way.
At 3.1. Yes, he did.
You got to keep that heat, brother.
what are your thoughts, Nate?
This, like you said, this is a weird time. Like, we're in the midst of Enokiism, where Enoki would just get so enamored with MMA and Pancrase and things like that. You know, and this is around the time frame where we get Ogawa coming into the Federation, you know, from the judo world. And Fujita is similar. You know, he's a product of that, where he was a legitimate fighter, and Enoki is like, well, if he can beat real tough guys, you know, he'll be great for this company. But he wasn't. But if you go back and look at this G1, they were pretty much trying to give him the Goldberg build, because none of his matches, he went undefeated in the B block, mm-hmm. and none of his matches went over 10 minutes. And so, like, I think he even beat Nakamura in, like, 6 minutes. So, like, they were really pushing Fujita hard in this tournament. But then on the other hand, you have Chono, who is, like, the last one standing for the Three Musketeers. The old veteran, and the crowd really got behind him. Like, that to me was the one saving grace of this match, because it wasn't the best match. But the crowd was into Chono. And like Steve mentioned, that like when he reversed, I forget how he reversed it into the STF. But they really got into that reversal, and Chono making his comeback after getting beat up, maybe realer than they knew for the past 5 minutes or so. But yeah, it wasn't a great match. I think the value of it is maybe to see a snapshot of what New Japan was like in the mid-2000s, and also to see how over Chono still was at this point in his career. But other than that, it was nowhere near as enjoyable as the first match.
Right.
Yeah, no, it was definitely a little clunkier, but then again, he was also a little older, obviously, too, but I thought it'd be a fun snapshot to see the 14-year window that Chono was arguably one of the highlights of New Japan for that 15-year stretch from 1991 to 2005, when he won 5, including 3 out of 4. G1 Climax title. So check those out. Both matches are on New Japan World. A lot of fun. Maybe you could check out some of the others. Well, the Rude one, I think, is on the network, right? Isn't it? I think it's in the WCW section, I think.
It might be. I have a cool disc that has all the finals from 91 to 2013, I think.
Oh, okay.
2014, so that's where I was watching them. It was pretty sweet. Yeah.
Unfortunately, the Chono semifinal win over Nock is not on there, but the final is on New Japan World. So, anyway, thank you for indulging me, guys. I love talking some Chono. Brother Nate, you now have the shoe. So, in 2 episodes from now, episode 134, it'll be your turn to give us a couple of awesome New Japan Classic match picks. Guys, that'll about wrap things up. Great sprint of an episode. I think we got a lot done. We talked about Saturday, so enjoy the 3 shows if you watch them all. And check out those Chono matches and anything else on NJPWWorld.com. We'll be back in 2 weeks for episode 133. We'll be coming ever so closer to the premiere of AEW on TNT as well as NXT on USA, both quite fascinating. Brother Nate, when's the next Kings of Sport drop?
There should be one out this weekend. It might just be myself doing a royal rant, or I might have a guest, or if Marcus still has not received his Prince. Visitor, then he might hop on with me, and we've got we'll talk about the Andrew Luck retirement. We'll talk some other NFL news and notes, and we'll talk about why Popeyes has got people losing their damn minds in America.
I know, right?
That just came out of nowhere.
Like, how does a chicken place run out of chicken in 3 days?
That's crazy. I got to say, that's crazy. Steve, you'll be with us. Anything else?
Yeah, of course I will.
Anything else you're thinking about? Have a good weekend, by the way.
Thank you. Yeah. I've been teasing something for a while, and I just haven't been able to get the ball. But Jordan Duggan and I are in fierce discussions in between talking about which Pokemon we caught today. Talking about a little bit podcast venture that we might have.
Oh, okay.
One that kind of crosses over between wrestling and pop. So we'll see where that goes.
Excellent. Well, I've mentioned a couple of shows. We have a big month of October coming up, PlaceToBeNation.com. Podcast and writings of some of the best horror movies of all time. I'm deep diving into Halloween. Not the franchise, although the franchise kicks ass, but I mean the holiday itself. But we're going to do classic monsters, Dracula, Frankenstein, Wolfman, a little Exorcist, a little Omen, whole bunch of great stuff. So check that out in the month of October. And then we will have a kind of a three-week tribute to the franchise of franchises from Thanksgiving until December 20th. I'm, of course, talking about
Shane Douglas.
Exactly. Well, there's only two franchises, Tom Seaver and Shane Douglas. One remembers his name, the other doesn't. But now I'm also talking about the Star Wars franchises. Of course, Episode 9 comes out at the end of the year, and we'll be doing a lot of that as well on PlaceToBeNation.com, and I'll be spearheading that as well. Brother Nate, Brother Steve, I am Brother Scott. You've been in the main event. Have a good weekend, Steve. Enjoy yours. Everybody, enjoy the wrestling, and as we go all, maybe, All Out TV, eventually. Have a good 2 weeks.
Hey, Steve Willie.
Hey, Nate Milton.
I know you're thinking of projects you can get into coming up, you know, maybe some podcasting. And I've been inspired by 30 for 30. Like, I love the documentaries. And so now I think, Steve Willie, I want to do an in-depth profile on what's happened to the former point guard from the University of Texas in the early 2000s.
Okay, this is a real deep one, so I'm ready. Hit me with it.
It's going to be called Royal Ivy Quest.